This is Super Yacht Radio.
Welcome to Super Yacht Radio, and welcome to the series of Seize the Mind, where I'm here, Maeve, in Dublin, and I will be chatting over the next few weeks with Emma.
Hi, I'm Emma Ross. I am a mental health first aider with Seize the Mind and Kelly's Cause, and we are going to be talking about topics around mental health and raising some awareness of mental health in yachting.
Welcome to Super Yacht Radio, and welcome to our segment, Seize the Mind, where I'm hosting it with Emma Ross, who is a mental health first aid trainer with Kelly's Cause. And I'm also joined today by Rachel Broughton and Karen Murphy, both of whom have long yachting experience. And to bring to the table, Karen Murphy is also known to many of you in Antibes as the crew counselor. And our topic today is looking at eating disorders. This is a big topic, one that affects every stage of life. I recently read actually that 13% of young people under the age of 20% will have an eating disorder by the time they get to 20, which is a startling large statistic. And I'm looking forward to hearing today about a little bit more understanding of eating disorders and also how it relates within the yachting community as well, how it's different on this one. So Emma, over to you first.
Brilliant. Okay, well, I think what would be pretty helpful to start off with is to kind of define there's three main eating disorders. So when we're talking about eating disorders, we're talking about primarily anorexia, bulimia, and binge eating. Now, anorexia is the kind of starving yourself, restricting the amount of food that goes into your body, and that's how it's classified. Binge eating is more the kind of overeating and then purging that we know. Bulimia, it involves episodes of excessive eating, food binges followed by behavior, which is kind of there to prevent weight gain. So purging, vomiting, use of laxatives, excessive exercising, fasting, those are the kind of binging behaviors. And then you also have binge eating disorder. And this is quite a new diagnosis. It's not just the same as overeating. It has some of the same symptoms as bulimia, but without the associated behaviors compensating for high levels of food intake. So those are the kind of three main ones that we talk about when we refer to eating disorders or ED.
Well, can I begin with just trying to understand? There's obviously many, many different causes and reasons, but in preparation, I was doing a little bit of research on trying to understand where it comes from, because to be honest, I would probably take the more generic view that this involves issues with body image, with self-image, with needing to control. But doing a little bit of research, and Karen, I'm going to refer over to you, but I found it interesting to look at with the research that it's been done over the past sort of two decades. They have found there are some genetic links. They did twin studies that found 50% of twins, when separated, will also show eating disorders, even when they're, you know, grown up in different households, that it can be associated with personality traits as well, you know, perfectionism and things like that. Obviously, the cultural ones we know of for many, many generations, the effect of media, the effect of images that were given. And they've also done some interesting new studies on looking at brain studies and biology, and that also may have a factor into it. However, I'm going to refer to kind of our expert here, Karen. Looking at some of the reasons or deeper issues, of food issues, where do you see that they kind of begin from?
It's hard to say. I mean, it's a very individual process. You know, everyone who suffers with these problems will it'll have its own origins. You know, it's hard to pinpoint down to one exact thing. I mean, they do have quite a lot of things in common, but they do, you know, like you mentioned before, come under the classification of addictions. And it's quite interesting in the fact that, like in the case of anorexia, it's and eating disorders where people purge and deprive themselves of food, then it's one of the only addictions where you don't use the substance that you're addicted to. So in that sense, it's quite different, but it is also the most dangerous of all addictions. It's got the highest mortality rate, and which a lot of people don't realize. I mean, they would think that perhaps, you know, drug use or you know, one of the higher, what is classified as a higher risk substance, but in actual fact, eating disorders have the highest death rate of all of what is classified as addictions. But I mean, it's again, it's one of the things that's hard to know the origins, and the only way of finding that is by actually, talking to the sufferer themselves. They are the best source of knowledge in their own problem. You know, I think Rachel is probably the person that probably is the expert in this instance on that.
Well, Rachel, can I turn over to you, because you've had long experience as a yachty and in this area as well. Can you share with us a bit of your story?
I worked on yachts with a few land-based breaks and all the rest of it in between for about 15 years. And when I joined yachting, I actually had an eating disorder. I think it started off more as anorexia. My final year at university, I just started to cut more and more things out of my diet. I became obsessed with looking a certain way, which it's been quite interesting through my recovery journey and in later years, reading so much about it, I started to realize how much of a cliche that I was. You know, I was the typical age for it to kick in. I think anorexia commonly kicks in more in teenagers or younger, but bulimia, which is what mine morphed into, was my final year at uni, so early 20s. And so by the time I joined yachting, I had been bulimic at university whilst backpacking around the world through a ski season, through moving back home with my parents, and then into my first year in yachting. So it's quite astonishing how secretive somebody can be when they are suffering from one of these things.
And during that time, can I ask, was this something you carried yourself? Was it something that you shared with anyone, or was this your own personal battle?
Absolutely nobody. I'm going to make myself sound really ancient now, but this was sort of the really early 2000s, so late 90s, early 2000s, and I'd say it's astonishing how much the stigma has come down even just since then. And I think just my thinking in itself, you mentioned the perfectionism that is common in a lot of people with eating disorders. My absolute horror was the thought of anybody knowing, because I thought it made me a failure. I thought it made me a loser. I used to joke, like even once I got into recovery, that, you know, bulimia, I used to consider myself a failed anorexic because I'd even failed at my eating disorder. You know, the goal was to just exist on Marlboro Lights and Diet Coke and never eat and look like Kate Moss. And, you know, lo and behold, when you don't let yourself eat anything all day, every day, many, many of us end up binging. And then the horror that we've taken in calories means then we want to get rid of those calories, and hence the bulimic purging can kick in. So no, nobody knew until I think, yeah, I was in my first year. I was still in my first year of yachting. I was a junior stewardess. And I met a guy who was in addiction recovery. And I think this is quite a common experience for people, not necessarily addictions and eating disorders or whichever. They're quite often various. But when you meet somebody who has been in the grip of an addiction or a compulsion, they see right through you. They can just see it. And when he found out I was bulimic, he wouldn't drop it. He wouldn't let it lie. He was like, do you understand what this is? To me at the time, it was still, in my sick mind, it was something I needed to do to look the way I needed to look, to have the kind of job I wanted, to have the kind of life I wanted, to get the kind of boyfriend I wanted. I really honestly had bought into that entire notion that only thin women, and actually it's not an entirely false notion, sadly, in our society, that only women that look a certain way, thin women, attractive women, get X, Y, and Z. And it was him that pointed out to me that a lot of the stuff that Karen's just said, that this is a mental illness and this could kill you. This isn't just something you do if you eat too much sometimes. This is really, really dangerous. And if you don't address this, you're in big trouble.
Yeah, very deep. So for you, what was the, I mean, recognition was the huge first step, but you were on board as well, which is a more challenging time to recover from something, I believe, than, you know, if you were land-based. So what were your kind of first steps of getting help?
Well, I would say my story is fairly unusual, and I wouldn't necessarily recommend my path to other people because it's fairly unorthodox. But because he was in a 12-step recovery program for his alcoholism and his addiction, we were in quite an inconvenient place. We were in the south of France at the time. He looked around for me and tried to find I think they call it Overeaters Anonymous, the 12-step program, which the name of which mortified me. I was like, I'm not an overeater. He tried to find an English-speaking Overeaters Anonymous group, and there wasn't one. So he asked his local AA group if I could come along there, which is, I don't think it's recommended. I think a lot of people in AA don't want people that are not alcoholics coming to their sacred space, really, to use their groups to recover. But these were an incredible group of people, and they let me come along, and they taught me the 12 steps of recovery, which I think was one of the most valuable things I've ever experienced in my life. And so now I think there are a lot more Overeaters Anonymous meetings around, and that might help a lot of people. But for me, those people really got me on the road, and they got me, they gave me the lifeline and the structure I needed to start recovery until I could get to a therapist and I could get the more specific help that I needed.
I mean, at what point can I ask that, because the process of recovery can take us all different lengths of time, kind of what was the point for you that you went, wow, I feel like now I've got over the worst of it and I feel stronger and ready to, did you have a point that you kind of went, okay, now I feel strong. I can deal with food. My body image is a lot stronger than it was. Kind of were able to take a step back and look in from a different perspective.
I'm not going to lie. It's a long, hard, really hard road to recovery. I think when something like that has a really strong grip on you, it's very hard to, you've basically got to deprogram your brain and reprogram it. It's an incredibly humbling experience to realize that I'd always sort of, I'd been quite strong academically at school. I thought my brain was my biggest asset. You know, I'd always been praised for my capabilities with my brain, and now here I was finding out that I wasn't in control of it. It was controlling me and it was malfunctioning. It wasn't well, it wasn't right. And I would recommend to anybody else now looking back on it, I'd be like, oh my God, get off a boat, go home, get the recovery that you need and take away those other stresses and do recovery, you know, in an undisturbed way. And it's, eventually further down the road, I did need to do that. And I did need to retreat home and have therapy and all the rest of it. But for quite a long time, I did the early bit, still working and still on a boat, which when you're a stewardess and you're around food all the time, is not easy.
Well, that's what I'm thinking. In some ways, of all things, food is everywhere. You know, it's three meals a day, whether you're on board, whether you're working in an office, our you know, schedules are rotated around food, lunch breaks, dinner breaks. It would strike me as extremely difficult to be able to get away from it, you know, where,
You know, yeah,
it was pervasive.
Actually, I mean, it was excruciating, really. I mean, you know, when you're a stewardess as well, you've got your crew breakfast, lunch and dinner, and then you're doing the guest breakfast, lunch and dinner, you're clearing massive buffet tables, you're sort of, you're around it all the time. And like, I think as Karen said, the one thing that sets eating disorders apart from other addictions is that the obsession is with not having that substance. Usually you're obsessed with trying not to eat and you don't want to be around food, and you suddenly you're around it all the time. And it does make breaking the starve and binge cycle incredibly hard. But for me, I just think recovery found me in the way I needed to have it brought to me. That's the way it worked for me. And I look back on it now and realize how unbelievably lucky I am, because I think it's even the vast majority of people with eating disorders don't recover. Mm. As Karen said, sadly, many die from them. And I think she would probably concur with this, that one of the leading causes of death is suicide. It's not actually the physical complications, it's that there's an underlying, often very fierce depression, which is what I had. But also in yachting, it's not just the food that you're around, it's the culture that you're within. And it's quite hard to unpick. I'd say it's a sickness, the sickness of the obsession with appearance and body image and thinking you need to look a certain way when the world around you is concurring with that theory. And sadly, in yachting, that is a very, very strong and still predominating trait that women are, especially women, but men as well, are quite valued for the way they look. So it just made recovery, that bit harder. So, yes, to answer your question, it was quite a long time before I ever felt strong and in control of it. I'd say a couple of years.
Emma, if I can turn to you, because I think this is, you know, one of the perspectives, and I'm sure you all have one, but why, as Rachel was saying, why in some ways eating disorders will be even more difficult to recover from when you're working as a yachty. And it is very much for the interior crew as well. We've had these debates in the industry as well of, you know, the look of you feels very important for many, many people in the yachting industry. So it also feeds into that perception as well.
Absolutely. I mean, it doesn't just feel that looks are important. It's confirmed by the fact that we have to put photos on our CVs, which is, you know, something that's quite unique to yachting. But also, while Rachel was talking, I mean, I just agree with her brilliantly, and I'm so glad she's here to share her story. But, you know, risk factors for deep eating disorders are things like pressures to be slim because of occupation. And traditionally, in mental health first aid, we talk about maybe being a jockey or a model, or like a gymnast or a ballet dancer. But I would definitely put being a yachty under that risk factor as well. And then there's certain personality characteristics that are risk factors for eating disorders. And there's definitely a crossover with those risk factors for eating disorders and typically what a stewardess is like takes pride in, which would be things like perfectionism, rigid kind of like all or nothing thinking, you know, they're all in with the boats, the boat is number one, and also a strong need to be in control of their circumstances, in control of their environments, in control of their food. And this might have stemmed from kind of the family upbringing, potentially, if things were spinning out of control when they were growing up. And as Rachel said before, you know, the kind of the age that it's quite common for eating disorders to kick in is around adolescence, but also around when females are getting their periods, first periods and all of that kind of stuff. So if your world is spinning out of control, it might be that parents are getting divorced, it might be that you've moved town or you've moved schools. Those kind of risk factors mean that you will want to control the one thing that you can control, which is food, your food intake. And as Rachel was saying before in her story, there's so many parts of it that's, you know, coming through the yachting recovery period that aren't normal, but there's quite a lot of it that was normal. So the kind of the age of onset and also being a high achiever. I know Rachel personally, so I know she's a high achiever and she's got lots of brilliant main qualities. I'm not sure her brain is the top one, but it's definitely up there. But that is kind of very characteristic of someone with an eating disorder. So it might be something that when you're looking to approach people or you're looking to assess whether you need to get involved and start helping the person or having a conversation with the person, do they check those kinds of factors? And if the answer is yes, in conjunction with the gut feeling that you have that you may need to talk to someone or you may recognize something in them that you've had yourself, that would all kind of come into the play when you're starting these conversations with people, because it is quite a hard conversation. I mean, Rachel, you know what it's like on boats. You kind of you're so busy trying to preserve the crew dynamic and the equilibrium on a boat. It's quite difficult to have these conversations and start and initiate these conversations. Do you agree?
Yeah, 100%. Again, like I say, if it hadn't been for the sort of x-ray vision of a recovering addict and his persistence, nobody else would, well, to be honest, I think I could hide it from everybody else because most people don't really know what to look for and most people don't know the behaviours and the risks. I don't want to call it ignorance because that sounds accusing. I think it's perfectly normal to be ignorant about these things unless you've suffered from them yourself. But there is a huge ignorance about eating disorders. And there is a very common misperception that it is all about food and also all about body image. And I think, like you say, it is nearly always about an underlying feeling that you're trying to numb. You're trying to numb painful feelings. Lack of control is a huge one and ties in massively with yachting because we're not in control of our lives on yachts. And for me, that's what, once I went into the recovery process, that's what I started to realize, is that it wasn't really about food. It wasn't really about my body. It was about me not being able to cope with the emotions that I felt, the pressure I put myself under, the perfectionism, the depression, and not feeling in control of the world around me. And so, yeah, I think yachting is it's a recipe. There's so many different factors involved, but I think yachting does bring a very big ingredient, which is the lack of control over your life and not necessarily a healthy environment to be in.
And also the escapism, you know, if you were at home and you were in the throes or development of an eating disorder, your friends and family who had a kind of a long history with you and context would be able to kind of spot those signs and symptoms a little bit earlier. But when you have a career in yachting, which can be transitory, it can be very kind of like chop and change, you can move from boat to boat and you'll be rewarded by the fact that you are slim, you're thin, you're all of those kinds of things. So any kind of downhill spiral won't be noticed necessarily by people that you've just met, or they won't have the capacity to talk to you about it. They won't have the history or the context. They might not have the skills. Like you said, it might not be down to ignorance, but it might just be that you're a new member on board and they're kind of learning, and they think, well, she's always been like this because she has always been like this in her world. And we keep saying she. It's also important, I think, the breakdown, maybe Karen can just confirm this, but I think it's 25% of eating disorders that occur in men. It is predominantly a female disorder, but eating disorders do happen in men as well. And for anyone that kind of wants to explore that side of it or get a bit more information, there is an amazing BBC documentary that's just been released on bulimia that was done by Freddie Flintoff, the cricketer. So when we were talking about, you know, maybe it being part of your job. So we keep talking about stewardesses, and yes, there is a pressure to be slim, but it's also a pressure on the deck team. You know, they've got to be strong. The jobs are very physical. There's quite a lot of like banter and ribbing on board. If you've got like a few extra pounds, it might just be that you're feeling out of control. You don't feel comfortable in your surroundings yet. You start getting teased, even though it comes under the banner of banter. And that could start something. That could start an eating disorder for a guy. As Freddie Flintoff says in his documentary, he was, you know, an incredibly accomplished cricketer. He got papped one day eating a pie, and it was just a really unflattering angle. He was a 17-year-old, pretty healthy international sportsman at that stage. He got papped eating a pie. It went onto the front pages of like some of the tabloids and stuff, and that started a 20-year eating disorder for him, which he's still suffering through now. So I know we've got a resource page that we're constantly updating. We can create a link to that. And it is something that we do need to kind of be aware in yachting, that this is not exclusive to females.
Well, and can I ask Karen, possibly is it even more difficult to detect in men because it's seen? I mean, because body image and all of that is talked about more with women than men, but they are as vulnerable as we are.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, and for the same reasons that Rachel was mentioning earlier with in yachting, it's that competition and that you know, the necessity to fit the image that is portrayed as being, you know, the ideal yachty image. So anything that veers from that is a threat. And I have to admit, when I worked in a rehab in the UK for a couple of years, we did start seeing a lot more guys coming in with eating disorders. And it was usually due to diagnosis as well. It went hand in hand with usually drug misuse rather than alcohol, because of course of the calories. And there was some, more often than not, probably some self-harming involved as well. But definitely more instances of males getting admitted into rehabs with the, you know, with eating disorders as one of the underlying causes.
So I'm kind of wondering, how do you, if it's very difficult to detect and, you know, the person themselves is very good at hiding it, how is this something that we can help on board vis-a-vis, you know, what sort of signs would we be looking for? I mean, it brings us back to, you know, starting a good conversation, but it strikes me as, you know, depression can be hard enough, or anxiety disorders can be hard enough to detect. Can you give us sort of some ideas of what we would be looking out for in our crewmates? Rachel?
I feel quite lucky that I got recovery so early in my yachting career, because I got to then experience the rest of my yachting career. You know, once I found that solid foundation and I was steady in myself and I felt, you know, I felt good, and I had a huge amount of education poured into me. I think that's something Karen would probably have a lot of experience of, is like a huge amount of recovery from an eating disorder is learning the false beliefs that you have about gaining weight and about diet and about these various things. And so once I had all that education poured into me, I then could go through the rest of my yachting career seeing so many of the people around me and the faulty beliefs they had about food, the faulty beliefs they had about, you know, if I just starve myself, then, you know, I'll lose weight and I'll keep it off. But so I think one of the main things I would say is when you're looking at your crewmates and you're starting to notice certain behaviors is you can, if you're a head of department, especially, this is what I found as a chief stew, is you can bring someone in for a chat and just, you don't have to go in with, I think you're bulimic, I think you're anorexic, or you can go in with, I really do believe as a head of department, we have a duty of care to the people that are working for and with us. And I think you can bring them in for a meeting and ask them if they're okay. You can ask them how they're doing, if there's anything stressing them out. You can just say to them, look, you seem a bit down, or you seem a bit anxious. You don't have to go in all guns blazing. I mean, there are little things you can look out for. There are things that might spark your attention. For me, I would always really be wary when a stewardess would start working. And again, it's a sliding scale. So a lot of people don't meet the diagnostic criteria for eating disorders, but they have disordered eating. So there was often a period of panic for a stewardess when she'd join a boat. And like you say, for guys as well, was suddenly they're surrounded by so much food and all their previous disciplines and rules would go out the window. And you'd see them get a bit panicky because they weren't able to eat the way they ate before, and they're gaining weight or they're changing or they're shifting. But you can look out for, you know, there's the people that avoid the crew mess at mealtimes. There's the people that disappear after their meals for longer than is normal. I mean, I had a cabin mate. I used to find one thing I always used to find with bulimia. It's like a really gross anecdote, really, but lettuce floats, and she'd always go and vomit after a meal. And what would come drifting back up the toilet when I went back in to use the bathroom after her, I'd always find bits of lettuce floating in the toilet because she was vomiting after meals. And there are a lot of telltale signs. There's the people that get really, really aggro and freak out when they can't exercise. Again, it's something a lot of people do just to feel okay and happy. But one of the forms of purging and bulimia is just exercise, excessive exercise. And if you notice that someone's quite obsessive about that, often the men, I think that's how it manifests in men a lot, is this obsession with, you know, they've got to be ripped, they've got to look like this, they've got to look like that. You know, again, you can bring them in and just have a meeting with them and just try and find out if they're okay, rather than just go on about the food situation or the exercise.
And also add to that as well, don't have these conversations around mealtimes. That's a real trigger point for people with eating disorders. So you might have, as a well-intentioned person, have noticed that, you know, they have sensitivity to comments or criticism about exercise, food, body shape or weight, that there's evidence of binge eating, that there is evidence of over-exercising, or you've noticed their behaviours focused on food, avoiding mealtimes or situations involving food, like crew meals and stuff. So you might notice it around there and it confirms it, but don't have these conversations. Early intervention is vital when it comes to discussing and having conversations around eating disorders,
but or just around other people.
Yeah, absolutely. But as a head of department or as a crew member that wants to get involved and help, all of those kind of what Rachel just said is, I would just really emphasize the fact that early intervention is vital, and don't have these conversations, you know, pre or post food, because that's kind of a trigger point for people with eating disorders. Have it maybe away from the boats, have it in a private space where you're not going to be disturbed by other crew members, where you have the time to chat to the person and really kind of let them know that you're invested. Also, when you're kind of having these conversations, it's really good to use I statements, like, I am worried about you, I've noticed, rather than you're making me worry, you're kind of like, you've changed the way you eat, all of those kind of things. So those are like tiny little ways of starting conversations and having having a conversation and listening and communicating non-judgmentally when you're talking to someone who is going to be quite defensive about this. As Rachel said, you know, it's an incredibly secretive disorder. So these are things that we have to consider when we're starting these conversations as a crew member or as a head of department.
And Karen, if I can kind of refer over to you, because Rachel, as she said, had a less usual path in her recovery. But I think the fact that you had somebody to support you and found this group to support you really was the kind of key point. But for the kind of stages of recovery, if you had somebody coming to you saying, I recognize that maybe I have a problem with food or I have a problem with my image, what are the kind of slow process of healing that needs to take place?
I think, like, again, like Rachel said, it's education was a key thing. It's learning, you know, educating yourself as much as possible. And luckily, you know, there are so many resources out there that can be accessed, you know, by the internet, and, you know, which wasn't the case 20 years ago. So, you know, in somebody's downtime on board, they can access pretty much everything. And there are, you know, there are online meetings for pretty much everything. Every 12-step meeting, you know, there are online meetings for now, which have become, you know, the norm, you know, and not just in 12-step. I mean, there are other groups which are non-12-step, such as, you know, Smart Recovery. I think there's a group, there's Grey Sheeters Anonymous, which is another eating disorder group. And obviously then there's the professional help, depending on the itinerary of the boat, you know, pretty much, again, counselors and therapists can be accessed online. You know, obviously, ideally, you know, face-to-face is best, but in yachting, it's not always possible unless you're on a boat that's, you know, in one place for an entire season, where you can go and access, you know, a therapist, because continuity is quite important. You know, you have to build up that relationship with a therapist. So, you know, if that's not possible, then everything can be done online.
Well, yeah, I was just going to add to that. Again, we'll add it to the resources page on Super Yacht Radio. But if people are needing extra resources, ABC, Anorexia and Bulimia Care, is a national eating disorder organization providing ongoing care, emotional support and practical guidance for anyone that's affected by eating disorders. We'll put a link up on the page. And then BEAT is also really brilliant. It's a leading charity in the UK supporting anyone affected by eating disorder, and it runs helplines so people can access that from anywhere in the world.
Okay. And of course, you know, anything you hear on this, you will find it not just on our website, but it'll also be linked up on the podcast if you are listening to this on podcast as well. I think that if I'm trying to be optimistic, I think the fact that we do have so many more resources online in the past two decades, I mean, we can talk a lot about the problems with modern digital communication, but having access to information, having access to support wherever you are, I think has made, and I think what you were saying, Rachel, as well, of a much bigger understanding and awareness in the past two decades has made a very big difference. I know when I was a teenager, I hadn't really even heard about bulimia. Anorexia was something I really only understood when I went through, you know, my medical training. And it's not till you really meet someone who's anorexic do you really understand what it's about, because you can read about it, but meeting someone who really has it for many, many years, and physically you can see it, it changes your perception of it. So I know with four daughters, body image is something I have been, and healthy eating has been something I've been very aware of. But when I was a teenager, Kate Moss was the biggest model. I love the fact now when I look at images all over the place, even in the fact that, you know, Paris or in France, they changed the model restrictions of what size and weight they decided. I I bless this because I think slowly we are, you know, changing what has been happening for decades.
I would say the resources in the internet are, it's a double-edged sword, the internet. Obviously, after my, as I said, rather unorthodox entry into recovery, the thing that I really, really did need, and once that group did give me a gentle nudge and say, you know, you're not really supposed to be here with us, you need to go and speak to someone who actually has experience with this. Once I found a therapist who was an eating disorder specialist, you know, that's when my recovery really took off. And I would say the same as Karen, you know, just the access that you can get now to an amazing eating disorder specialist counsellor, even if you just don't speak to a generic counsellor, and all counsellors will have training in this, you can get access to them online. You know, you can be in your cabin on a break, you can go for a walk ashore, and you can access this incredible care. The resources, I think one of the most empowering things I ever did in my recovery was to go and read about and study eating disorders. Because then I started to feel like I was back in control. I was learning about something that had afflicted me, and I started to fill up on this knowledge, and it fascinated me. And I could see that I was just another person that had stumbled into this particular problem. And I think that was really, really beneficial to, you know, to learn all these things about how if you starve your body, you will become obsessed with food. If you don't get certain good fats in, you will become depressed. If you don't have tryptophan in your diet, your body will struggle to make serotonin. You will be unhappy. Like, there's certain little key facts that were massive turning points for me, and all they took was some reading. However, the double-edged sword of the internet is that there are very dangerous pro-ana sites online where anorexics and people with eating disorders get together and share tips on how to indulge further in their often fatal illness. You know, a lot of that stuff I wasn't exposed to, and I feel really worried for kids now that do have access to a lot of this stuff. And also I think Instagram is pretty poisonous. It's pretty toxic. You know, I'd see a lot of the junior students that would come in, and again, I'd try so hard to just try and say to them, look, you cannot go on some mad juice cleanse now. You're going to be doing 16-hour shifts. You need carbs. You need energy. Like, this is an active job. Like, come on, don't do that. You know, I tried to instill a culture, and I think that's something really major that heads of departments can do, instill a culture that isn't about, let's all go on a diet this week. Let's all go on a cleanse. But sadly, online, it's everywhere, you know, and this obsession with, I think it's orthorexia is one of the ones they talk about now, this obsession with healthy eating, which is often an obsession with restriction and deprivation disguised as being healthy or cutting up food groups. So internet, great resource, but also careful not to go down the wrong rabbit hole.
Yeah, I actually was wondering that, because we certainly understand a lot more about nutrition now, but that what I would think is a very thin line between being aware of healthy nutrition and healthy food to restricting it only for that strikes me as possibly a very thin line between the two as well.
Definitely. And I noticed it a lot. I noticed it in a lot of the junior stews when they would come in. It would start out about, and I'm not saying that everybody that's vegan or everybody that's this or that has an eating disorder. There's a lot of very healthy, happy vegans. But quite often you'd see the person that was quite obsessed with, I don't eat this, I don't eat that. You'd start to down the line, you'd start to see them indulging in pretty unhealthy practices, and you'd think, this isn't about health, this is about your weight, or this is about self-restriction, or, you know, that a lot of the time those things were not about health at all. You know, you'd see them out the back of the boat having two cigarettes to try and not eat so much food after their tofu salad. You know, it's a lot of the time it's disguised.
Emma, if we're getting near the end of the program, so if I could hand over to you just to lead out of the different steps we can take from here.
Yeah, okay. Well, I mean, first of all, like we've said, early intervention is vital. So the sooner you kind of deal with this, the better for the person. Like I said, you know, it might be a combination of risk behaviors or risk factors that you've noticed. It might just be a gut feeling, or it might be that you're viewing it through a lens of something else, like your own recovery, that you're able to approach the person. You know, create an environment where they feel safe talking to you. As we said, don't do it around food, don't do it around other people. Tell them from the beginning that you will protect their confidentiality, unless you think that, you know, it's at a stage where this person might actually need to be kind of get some kind of medical help or intervention or even hospitalization. But before that, you know, try and listen and communicate non-judgmentally. That's something that we always try and push. You would want to give support and information to that person. As Rachel said, you know, something that was really great for her was reading. So maybe don't kind of do all the research for the person, but get them involved in their own research and get them kind of looking for sites that can help them, or materials, reading materials that will be able to help them, and then try and find information. You know, if you are in a foreign country, see if there is something local to you, a support group, a therapist, speaking therapies, any of that kind of stuff. If that's not available, maybe go online and see what you can do online in terms of therapy. So encouraging that kind of appropriate professional support would be really important for someone in this stage of recovery. And then also trying to get other people, you know, encourage other support. So try and get them to speak to their friends and family at home, get them to be open and honest about where they are in their eating disorder would promote recovery. Because with eating disorders, as I understand, it really does need to be kind of like a full intervention. The more people that know about it, and the more people that have an understanding about it, this is something that you don't want to keep a secret from the person's friends and family and social network. So encouraging them to reach out to people and get that support so they can stay on the path to recovery would be key, I would think. And just, yeah, create it. Like we always say with mental health first aid, we're not therapists, we're not counselors, but what we are is first aiders. And if you're on a boat and you are in a position where you can't get to therapy or can't get to a counselor, what first aid is really good for is just getting that person over the bridge until they can get the appropriate professional support. So maybe create a scaffolding of support and confidentiality, and let that person know that they're kind of safe within that boat, and you get them the help they need would be really encouraging and promote recovery.
And Karen, before we leave, is there something else you'd like to kind of add into Emma's?
Yeah, absolutely. Totally agree with that. That's why the mental health first aiding is so important on board. It's because it gets that cycle of change going, and you know, and it gets somebody from, you know, that pre-contemplation stage to the contemplation, and then hopefully into the action stage. Because by the time somebody comes to somebody like me, a counselor, a therapist, they've already decided they want to change, and that's why that having a first aider on board, someone who's trained, can help them to get to that stage. Whereas, you know, maybe they mightn't have gotten to that stage, you know, on their own, or perhaps it might have taken a long time. So absolutely, yeah, totally, everybody should be doing this.
Wonderful. Well, thank you all so much for joining us today. I've understood a lot more, I should say. Not necessarily learned it, but understood it. Rachel, thank you so much for sharing your story. I think hearing someone's experience just makes all the difference. And I'm sure that, you know, going forward, that this is now going to be perhaps a strength that will help you help others and guide them along the way. But thank you so much for joining us today. Karen, thank
you're
you
welcome.
As well. Karen Murphy is the crew counselor in Antibes and can be found on Facebook and online. And of course, Emma Ross, who is our mental first aid instructor with Kelly's Calls. You can find her at Kelly's Calls or reach out to her with
Emma@kellyscalls.com. And yeah, if you go to Kelly's Calls yachtsandyachts.com on the internet, we have a specific yachting resource called Seize the Mind, and you can click on there to find out more about mental health first aid training, and where we're doing our next training and how to get involved and get a mental health first aider on your boat.
And if you want to find out any more information, we on our website page, there will be a link to all the things that we're mentioning, as well as other online resources that you can have to read and help you along the way. And just to mention as well, there is a fairly new resource for all yachties called Yacht Help. And this is open to all yachties wherever you are in the world. You can phone them up, and it is a very good first step to take for many people as well. So thank you so much for joining us today, and stay well, stay safe.
This is Super Yacht Radio.